Hello, and welcome to the Market Bull Podcast. Please note, topics and stocks discussed in this podcast are not financial or investment advice. On today's episode, I spoke with David Bozzio, the Western Australian State Manager and Director of Corporate Finance at Shaw & Partners. The last time I spoke with David was back in January for episode 2 of the podcast. Today we began our conversation by discussing what the current market sentiment looks like. We then looked at the strengths in the gold sector and what were the factors that are driving this movement. The majority of the podcast focused on the growing mergers and acquisitions being seen across the market. We looked at what this means for a variety of sectors and why this is occurring. A timely podcast with companies across the world looking to build their portfolios by acquiring others. I hope you enjoy listening. So hello and welcome to the Market Bull Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Kostrich. And today on the show, I've got one of the first guests I had, or episode 2, in David Bozzio. Welcome to the show, David.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's good. Well, last time we spoke was just the end of January and a whole lot has changed. And for the listeners that want to learn more, I'd recommend going back to episode 2 and listening. But you're the WA State Manager and Director of Corporate Finance at Shaw & Partners, which is an investment and wealth management firm located in Perth, and an Australian-based company, but you're located in Perth. And you're backed by a big major financial group, EFG International. So you have a hell of a lot of resources and, well, your portfolio is rather large. But without diving too much into that, as we'll go in later, how have you seen the markets play out in the first 3 months in your personal experience?
It's been a hell of a ride, hasn't it? We've seen... I think there was a terrific start to the year, which saw January being a fair amount of liquidity and share price appreciation, but that's fallen to earth with a thud through February and March, and we've seen a lot of the geopolitical tension and talk around interest rates and inflation, etc., really dominating the narrative, and I think markets have really struggled on the back of that. So it has been a hard start to 2023 for most investors.
I remember we talked about it and it was one of those words that stuck with me, this sigh of relief. And we're all like, oh, it's, you know, we're onto 2023. It's a new market outlook. But yeah, it's sort of reality came in with a thud and it's been a bit tough going. But one of the commodities that's been naturally almost behaving in a way it should be has been gold. What do you think is driving that gold price movement and what are some of the factors impacting that price?
Well, gold's been a store of wealth, and people often revert to gold as being a hedge against geopolitical risk around inflation, around uncertainty. And I think it's been quite a good investment class over the last few years where the markets have been quite choppy. And in particular, over the last, call it, 12 months in the market, we've seen general pullback in many of the indices, whereas gold, although it hasn't rallied and there hasn't been particularly strong sentiment in the gold market, it's actually held up. And many, many professional investors will say, well, that's what its job is. So it just remaining consistent and not really losing a lot of value, is gold really doing its job as a hedge against turmoil or uncertainty in the markets?
And I know recently there was a huge spike in gold, and that was, I reckon, related a lot to the banking issues that we saw across the world. And that caused a huge few-day rebound. And now we're sitting again at that, approaching that $2,000 mark in the spot price. One of the questions, though, is are we seeing this sort of positivity flow and transition into the stocks on the individual levels?
Yeah, I'd say not really. I think we've had we have these little moments in I guess where if you track the gold price, where, as you said, it's been hovering around this 2000 US mark, and on a good day you'll see our gold equities, particularly the producers, so call it your Newcrests, Northern Stars, Evolutions of the world, they seem to have a good day on strong gold days, but they give it away very quickly if the gold price softens. So to me, it's as a gold investor, it still feels like it's been quite hard to really catch this bid, or and maybe it's because we're not seeing it in terms of investor sentiment. So the euphoria that often really drives the sector. And we've seen it in, call it, the battery metal space, like the lithium plays really caught the attention of investors. And you've seen massive increases in some of the share prices. It feels like we haven't seen that yet in the gold space. But I'd urge people to look at also, we look at this headline number of 2,000 US, which is where it's been hovering around at the moment. But you have to look at it in terms of Aussie dollars as well. And at the current Aussie currency, so at the Aussie dollar price, gold's touching on $3,000 an ounce, and that's historically very, very high. And if you're an Aussie gold producer, most producers are doing very, very well, making very, very good margins at these sorts of Aussie gold prices. So we'll see if the equities are able to really catch a bid over the next few months. It's an interesting space to really watch.
Yeah. And when we're looking at the almost the factors that are impacting it, and you mentioned before, you know, interest rates and inflation, how do those factors all sort of contribute to gold sort of varying its movements, and what are some of the other ones that impact its volatility?
Yeah, so they all have sort of competing influences on one another. So if you look at it from a purely, I call it, economics perspective, as a student or an observer of economic theory, typically high interest rates tend to reduce demand. So a higher interest rate means that things cost more, and therefore your purchasing power goes down, and that affects asset classes such as gold. So that would indicate perhaps lower prices. But you couple that with a inflation environment, as we've seen, where we've got government policy, which is a big factor, I believe, fiscal and monetary, but we've got monetary policy at the moment, which is really being used as the cornerstone strategy to really crank up rates to fight inflation. So although we've seen a rising interest rate market, that is being used as the tool to try and combat very, very high inflation. And typically, high inflation has been a good environment for the gold price itself. As again, high inflation means a decrease in the purchasing power of money on the actual real value of currencies. And gold is seen as a safe haven, as something that is not affected by those same, call it, inflationary effects on say, a currency. So again, it's an asset class that investors tend to gravitate toward in this sort of environment. You couple that with things like what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, the China and US tensions as well. We've seen in Australia this recent, unprecedented spend on these nuclear subs. That's a significant, not only a government spend, which is seen as potentially, does that go down to, is that something that creates stimulus within our market? Probably does. It's there to create government spending, jobs, etc. But also part of that rationale, and a big part of it, is to demonstrate that we've got a sound defence within our nation. And that probably tells you something around geopolitical tension in the world at the moment, which is very, very high. So I think all of these factors really do contribute to what we're seeing in the gold market at the moment.
Yeah, and I 100% agree. There's a lot of factors, and gold is always pinned as the safe haven that people flood towards. And it's been unpredictable in that regard because it hasn't necessarily played out like that over the past, 2 years in a way. And now it's sitting in an area that, if you look at it in some perspectives, it's at an incredible level. And then, it's where can it break through and go even higher? And we're looking at potentially the Fed's indicated last week in the US that there might be an ease or maybe even a restriction or a pullback in interest rate rises in the next sort of couple quarters, which who knows if that happens. I think people are taking it with a grain of salt, but for, for market sentiment and outlook, that's got to be a good sign if the Feds in the US are looking to halt rises in interest rates. What do you think that's going to have a potential play in the second half of this year?
Yeah, I think we're, to be honest, trying to bet on the gold price itself and trying to bet on interest rate moves. I've found that I'm very, very bad at both. So what I can do as an investor looking forward is saying, well, I do think that we're in for a lot of volatility. If you look at, say, the futures markets as a leading predictive tool on where rates are going, it does look like we must be close right now to either a serious pause, and this is both in Australia and overseas, in terms of where rates are going, and most indicators expect cuts, so interest rate cuts between before the end of the year. So provided, I guess, the current landscape remains consistent, we may see things starting to stabilize there, which would probably suggest that the gold price consolidates around these levels or drifts at these at this time. But there are sort of other factors there as well. And it's probably driven by some of the companies themselves and investor sentiment toward you know, gold as an investment class. I think those key factors will really impact on where the price goes from here.
And in your current sort of work, are you seeing that the market, again, the willingness to sort of do IPOs or invest capital is halted? Where are you seeing it? Is it more in the mergers and acquisition side of things? Or do you reckon that there's going to be a bit more IPOs and bigger companies going out for money now?
I think the IPO market is, I would say, subdued is probably a nice way of putting it at the moment. And there are a few reasons for that. Typically, IPOs, especially many IPOs are more speculative in nature. Early stage companies looking for that sort of growth equity to take their business models or their early stage enterprises forward. I think in the current environment, that's a very, very hard ask to go out there and raise that sort of risk capital from investors. And we've seen a lot of those IPOs that have successfully listed over the last few years are currently sitting underwater in most instances. Liquidity dries up very quickly and it takes some time for investors to recoup their money, and that really affects sentiment towards the IPO market. So I think any IPOs that are really going to get away and be successful at the moment would have to be relatively advanced in terms of, you know, businesses, potentially companies with earnings and profitability. I think they'll always have a place and they'll always have demand around IPOs. But I believe that just the new, more conceptual style companies are going to struggle. We see a lot of them in exploration, so resources exploration. I think that's going to be a very tough place at the moment. But we are seeing, you know, the rise of M&A, and there have been a number of M&A initiatives over the last few months, and private equity has led many of those as well. So there's a huge pool there of capital sitting in private equity land, and yeah, that's really very professional, significant investors who have a real clear strategy, and they've got a balance sheet which is essentially cash and ready to deploy. So I think that's going to be a very, very interesting space that heats up over the course of this year.
And have you seen any companies already in the mergers and acquisitions side of operating already make some moves? I know there was one last week with Twiggy Forest buying a company just on the market, just completely taking it out. And that sort of, in a way, got a lot of international exposure, at least in Australia, I should say, when that came out. But have you seen any others that are notable currently operating?
Oh, absolutely. If just to rattle off a couple of the bigger ones, you know, we've got InvoCare, which is a funeral services provider. A sector that a lot of people probably just you know, their eyes glaze over, but it's been dominated by private equity. And so InvoCare are currently under a $1.8 billion takeover by TPG Private Equity. So that's a serious transaction. You've got United Malt Group. They're a $1 billion company. They've gone into a trading hold as we speak. Details haven't been revealed yet, but it looks like it's a proposed change of control transaction. We've got Newmont and Newcrest. You know, that's a $17 billion US takeover. So again, that hasn't played itself out, but you know, going back to the gold space, Newmont, being one of the world's largest gold producers, are looking to take over Newcrest, one of Australia's largest gold producers, and that's via some sort of merger is how it's been proposed. It's been defended at this stage or rejected by Newcrest, but typically these things
come back.
Yeah, they come back. And so it's not over just yet. So that could be a significant transaction. And we're talking, you know, north of 20 billion Aussie, which is huge for our market. So you can see that there's some big cashed up companies already putting their, putting their best foot forward in many instances. You look at something like Mincor, which you mentioned. So again, Wyloo being part of the private holdings of Andrew Forrest, you know, they've stepped up with a $760 million cash takeover. It's an on-market takeover. So they've got their buying on the screen saying, you know, we want to buy all the shares in Mincor. Now, that's very interesting for the market because it's quite an aggressive approach.
Mm.
They're kind of drawing a line in the sand, I believe, to say this is what we think. We probably think the company's too cheap. So if it's going to trade under that price, we'll buy the whole thing, which is a very aggressive sort of strategy. And also last week in the junior gold end, Ramelius. So certainly no junior themselves, but they're a $1 billion gold producer. They've been extremely acquisitive over the last 10 years. That's how they've really driven their growth. And they made an opportunistic takeover for Breaker Resources, which it's about $130 million ticket. So it's not a huge transaction, but it's very opportunistic. It comes with Breaker having around $70 million of cash. So you can see Ramelius have clearly done the numbers and said, well, as part of this transaction, we get quite a lot of cash and we get quite a few ounces that we can produce as part of our ongoing operations. We'll take that. And I think it just shows you that some of these companies that are cashed up are now starting to open up these transactions, which tells me that maybe it's a time where there's some value starting to creep into the market and companies that are undervalued are going to start getting snapped up.
And is this across a whole host of different, I guess, segments of the market as well? Or are you noticing that it's particularly in the exploration, but before you mentioned the funeral homes, which I don't think many listeners would have even considered as a potential takeover target, but is it a whole spread? And then the next $1 million question is, as an investor, how would you try and almost, you know, with your crystal ball, predict which companies are going to have these sorts of targets on them?
Yeah, I think it's certainly across all sectors. I don't think it's restricted to anyone, but I do feel that it's the more advanced companies that where you'd expect to see this activity happening. Going back to that Mincor example, Wyloo already owned close to 20% of that company. So it makes sense for them to say, well, if we feel that it's undervalued, we've got a very good chance of taking control of the whole company. So I think if you look at emerging companies, again, if we focus on resources, I think it's those that have got good quality defined assets, good quality defined resources, typically sitting on potentially a fair amount of cash and in the right jurisdiction, I think that starts to become quite compelling. A lot of the producers in the resources space, their biggest challenge is how do you replace production? So if you look at something like the Newmont Newcrest Tire, or Newmont, are a major producer. So every year they produce significant ounces of gold. Their challenge is to show the investment community that they can replace those ounces and that they can replace production. Otherwise, analysts will look at these companies saying, well, they're chewing through their mine life, and at some time they're going to have zero resources left. So their challenge is to say, well, we need to buy good quality ounces in the gold example, or good quality resources when it comes to other minerals, to continually replace our production. So there are lots of drivers, I think, really fueling this M&A cycle.
And when we're talking about it, of course, there's the big companies that are going in and trying to get these resources because, yeah, the numbers that are being future forecasted, yeah, there needs to be this supply. And we're seeing that companies are, in a way, almost integrating their supply chains. They want to own the entire structure now. You know, we've got car manufacturers that are diving into buying mines in the US. And is that a trend that you think is going to continue? Or, as you highlighted before, it's going to be more of the private equity and venture capital groups that are going to come in and buy up these assets because almost they're thinking ahead in regards to companies are going to want them, but this is a good asset that hasn't been noticed yet.
Oh, I think your ability to really own that whole value chain is such a massive attraction for any acquirer. If you look at in the rare earths sector, there's been a transaction where, again, looking at Andrew Forrest's private group, Wyloo, they've come into a listed company in Australia called Hastings, where they provided a funding package. Now, that funding was actually utilized to buy a cornerstone shareholding in a magnet manufacturer in North America. So it's a very interesting strategy, and it's going to be one. I'm not quite sure what the end game is,
yeah,
because I'm privy to those insider discussions. But if you look at it as an outsider, that group, Wyloo, now have got a commanding position in Hastings, which is developing its rare earth deposits in Western Australia. But they've also got their foot in the door in terms of the magnet manufacturing process. Now, that's extremely valuable when you look at that sector, which is very much dependent on processing in Asia. So often a rare earths concentrate that comes out of Australia will end up in Asia for refining and turning into a saleable product. And then the magnet manufacturing, which is one of the largest uses of rare earths globally, typically is done out of China as well. So by owning that whole value chain, you do move the reliance away from, say, China in that example, and also start to take some control back in terms of processing and pricing, etc., which is extremely valuable. And we'll see how that plays out. But to your point around, many battery manufacturers have also invested in direct mines, for things like lithium, because they're so reliant on supply that they have helped many of these developers get through that process of, you know, the hard part of building a mine and then being able to fulfill their offtake. So I think we're going to see more and more of that, and it'll be interesting to see how it really does play out. But it's it shows you how strong the underlying need for some of these minerals really is.
Yeah, and the pandemic, the shutdown of global economies, highlighted to a lot of companies that you need your own almost supply chain, either as a backup or more to the current point that you almost need to have control of it from start to finish. And we're seeing these companies with rather amounts of capital waiting to get the right opportunity. And it's not a process that happens, you know, 1 week, 2 week, 3 week. It's this drawn out plan of 5 to 10 to 15 years where they're just acquiring these little assets along the way. And if you take a step back and you look at not necessarily knowing what's going on in the boardroom meetings, but you can almost see a roadmap of what they're trying to accomplish. And with the demand in so many of these areas that, you know, these electric vehicles, these batteries, there's so many of these products that are genuinely needed very, very highly. And now there's these companies that strategically acquiring resources and entire supply chains to then be, you know, really a market leader in that regard, which, yeah, it will be fascinating because I look back to, you know, even Elon Musk buying Twitter, a very bizarre one at the time, but that was almost one that just out of the blue happened, or maybe not out of the blue, but, and then all these other companies are starting to do it. And I don't know if it's probably always been the case that there's points in the market whereby this becomes a more of a dominant factor of acquiring companies as opposed to just everyone being able to do it on their own. But maybe that's a reflection of the next stage of the market outlook. And I think it will be very exciting. And I think as an investor, it's really, you've got to be, again, looking at everything, really analyzing it. So it's good to sort of, you know, have your leaders. And I mean, for listeners that want to learn more about yourself at Shaw and Partners, and who knows what sort of advice you might be able to give, but where can people go to get more information about yourself and Shaw and Partners?
Yeah, so we're quite proud of our online resources, and we do have a lot of information on our website. So for any listeners, if you do go to the website, shawandpartners.com.au, and we have a lot of we have a very strong presence on social media, etc. as well. But we're very fortunate because we have a strong national business. So we have offices in every major city in Australia, and we are part of the EFG Group, which I think you mentioned earlier. So EFG are a Swiss private bank. They're listed, and they are a very, very large player in the wealth management space. So through our association with them as our parent, as well as our internal team, we do publish a lot of research. We've got a global view. We see things, I believe, very differently because we've got a team in Europe that are seeing what's happening in Europe. We've got a team in the US that see what the trends are in the US. We've got a team in Asia that are seeing a lot of the flows, and there's been a lot of change in the Asian investment community as well, particularly with a lot of funds moving out of Hong Kong into Singapore. So there's a lot going on, and we're able to access a lot of that. So for any listeners, if you do sign up for any of our publications, we do put out a lot of research as well, which is available particularly to investors and clients. And we're very, very happy to assist where possible with any of these sorts of queries. And very interesting times is all I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in the markets for 22, 23 years now, and there's so much change. And it feels with what's happened, say, with Credit Suisse over the last few weeks, it has some scary reminders that bring me back to the GFC. But it does feel like, I think, is that the narrative has changed. The global leaders are stepping in to try and appease investors as well, and I don't think it's going to be as bad as what we saw during the GFC.
Yeah.
But it's there's always these frightening little reminders. And as investors, I don't think you ever stop learning. So it's good to have a team around you that can help and really shed some light, and a little bit of experience is really what helps in these sorts of times.
Couldn't agree more. And they sound like fantastic resources if it's, again, access all across the world to movements and patterns. And yeah, time is precious for a lot of people. So if someone can synthesize it, I'd highly recommend checking out Shaw and Partners. But yeah, thank you for taking the time to speak with me today on the show. And I'll touch base with you in the next sort of handful of months to see what's been happening and what changes we've had since this conversation. So yeah, thank you for speaking with me today.
Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
Thanks for listening to the Market Bull podcast. If you enjoyed it, please make sure to like and subscribe. You can follow the Market Bull on our socials at Twitter and LinkedIn by searching the Market Bull. You can also subscribe to our newsletter on the website by visiting www.themarketbull.com.au.